Lithium is the new oil, and the world's great powers all want it. This is Brief Before Impact. Welcome, everyone. I am Matt Parker. Thanks for joining me for this episode. Tonight, we're going to be discussing the importance and the growing importance in the future of lithium, how it's being used in technology, batteries, computers, electric vehicles, and what great powers like the United States and China are trying to do to get their claim on this very small market. We're going to talk about the effects of lithium mining, the strategic impacts, and of course close out with our courses of action for the United States regarding its desire to acquire as much lithium as possible. Before we do that, let me take a quick ad break and we will get to work. All right, welcome back, everyone. Whenever I first came across this issue of lithium, I knew so very little about it. And it's only recently that I've realized how much importance this mineral has on the next 20, 30 years of geopolitics, competition, national security. So as diving into it, I learned there are so many ripples of the policies that are being put into effect today that we'll see and their outcomes in the next decades. So let me first start about giving a little description how what lithium is and how it's being used, more importantly, where it's being found and how there are countries competing over it. So starting off, you're going to hear me here describe this term called the lithium triangle. Really, this isn't a triangle at all. It's just a part of the world in South America where a tremendous amount of the world's lithium is located. So some data here, according to a Center for Strategic and International Studies, as a mineral, lithium can be found naturally, either in hard rock deposits or in salt lakes. It is commercially viable after it's extracted through mining. Australia, the world's largest producer of commercial lithium, mines directly from hard rock deposits. Now, in contrast, the lithium triangle countries are characterized by natural deposits of lithium found underneath the expansive salt flats in Argentina, Bolivia, and Chile. These are the three countries that make up the lithium triangle. So Chile's favorable arid climate makes the process of lithium extraction and evaporation easier than in neighboring countries, Argentina and Bolivia. While both the geographical context and the climate of the lithium triangle are important factors for the successful extraction of lithium resources, the unconducive investment climate in Argentina and Bolivia has been an even more determinant factor in the transformation of their lithium resources into commercially viable reserves. So what we understand is lithium is a very commercially viable mineral. It's found in huge quantities in the three countries, Argentina, Bolivia, and Chile, which are all in the Western Hemisphere in South America. The challenge has been so far that while there is a successful extraction of this mineral, it's the investment climate into a couple of these countries that have made a challenge for foreign investment dollars coming from, say, the United States and other countries like China to actually be utilized, making this a more easier process, a more lucrative process in these countries. So we're going to talk about how, despite this tremendous desire for this mineral, electric vehicles, for example, their batteries use a tremendous amount of lithium. Lithium really changed the battery industry years ago, making lithium batteries far more, have such a longer capacity and can be as well as rechargeable batteries. And we've seen them grow popular, and which has really blossomed the electric vehicle industry. And a part of this you've heard some often, especially in the United States, is we just passed a bill that spent hundreds of billions of dollars on climate change, is how electric vehicles are going to change the landscape of automobile industry and help with the climate change issue. And lithium naturally is going to be a part of this resolution to fixing the issues of climate change through the production of fossil fuels. However, that argument does have its fallbacks. As you can imagine, extracting lithium through the mining process, especially in countries that might not have the dollar I should say, the resources or the investments necessary to make this a more climate-friendly process in the first place, you can imagine that this would have an effect on climate change, at least affecting the natural topography of their own land where they're creating these mines. And actually, it could be a more of a problem than it is a solution. And I'm going to give you a couple of data points here, not even from climate deniers, anything like that. These are quite climate change positive folks. And despite the tremendous uses of lithium, it has been criticized for the mining extraction process and how it's creating more climate change issues. According to Change It blog, one of the reasons for the high carbon footprint of producing lithium batteries is the source of energy used during the manufacturing process. Nowadays, the batteries are made in countries where the mix of energy is not so clean. So, for example, China produces 60% of its electricity from coal. So if the batteries are made in countries with higher percentages of greener electricity sources, so thinking renewables plus nuclear, and some European countries are already investing in that, then the carbon footprint of the batteries will reduce. So this is the argument. Electric vehicles, for example, becoming very popular, branching out of the mainstream. Everyone knows Teslas for their incredible vehicles that they produce, but now you have like Chevrolet, Ford, etc., all producing these electric vehicles. So the demand is growing. The argument they're making here, though, is if those batteries that are required for these cars are now being produced in countries like China that's using 60% of its energy to produce the battery is being coming from coal, this is going to further create issues for the climate. Comparing that to more renewable, energy-friendly countries like you've seen in Europe. Now, the mitigation for the environmental impact of lithium mining is pretty expansive. For example, a German company has pioneered a lithium extraction technique using geothermal power, which it is claimed to emit zero, that is none, CO2, matching the European Union's stringent climate agenda. And the project is expected to produce enough lithium for 1 million batteries per year, with possible production beginning in 2024, so they're a few years away. And that could strengthen the European Union's capability to supply its own domestic car batteries. However, the criticism still is around, saying how the overall energy demand for producing these types of lithium-powered batteries, though it can contribute to climate change, it will eventually offset the damage done by fossil fuels, for example. Quote, there are carbon dioxide and other greenhouse emissions that come with the process of extraction. This is according to Zeke Hausfather. He's a scientist at climate research nonprofit in Berkeley, Earth for Climate 360. Now, quote, it's not like CO2 comes out of the lithium, but it does take energy to mine things. Today, many of those systems involve emitting CO2. So lithium ion battery mining and production were determined to be worse for the climate than the production of fossil fuel vehicle batteries. That was according to an article from the Wall Street Journal. So for example, when you're evaluating the energy that it takes to produce car batteries, often they'll cite something called the cumulative energy demand, CED for short, and this will measure how much energy is expended in the production of car batteries. So according to scientists measuring CED, production of the average lithium ion battery uses 3 times more electrical energy compared to the generic battery. So however, once the car batteries are produced, their rate of fossil fuel emissions become much lower than a gas-powered car. For example, the U.S. Department of Energy shows that the national averages of fossil fuel emissions for gas-powered cars are more than double the average for that of electric car emissions. This creates a misconception that electric cars are 100% better for the climate than gas-powered cars. And this is something that I was really illuminated to whenever you study so much or look into the climate change issue, which is certainly not like a passion of mine or anything, but you have to agree that with the billions of dollars being poured into mitigating the fallout of fossil fuels, it's going to have an overall trend towards our national security and our foreign policy abroad. It certainly deserves attention. So this is why I think the lithium issue is quite fascinating, particularly where the majority of these lithium mines are available for the United States to utilize, if in fact, as a country, we're going to continue to trend towards renewables, zero emissions, net zero, fill in the blank, whatever synonym they want to use. If that's the case, we want to certainly have an advantage in the access of this really rare mineral, especially since it's not expanded across multiple geographies around the world, but much like Middle Eastern oil, it's kind of in one spot more or less in the world. So again, we take a look at the importance of the lithium triangle. According to the Center for Strategic International Studies, it is the lithium triangle's emerging strategic importance, however, that continues to attract the interest of significant foreign investment as countries seek to gain a technological advantage through the control of the lithium energy, since lithium supply chains will be crucial for the future of technology and clean energy. Lithium will play a role in great power competition between the United States and its competitors, principally China, in the coming years. China currently leads the world in the production of electric vehicles. In large part, this is because it has acquired 55% of the chemical lithium supply required for electric vehicle batteries, primarily through its early investments in the largest mining production operations in Australia. So let me just interject for a moment. Whenever I think about supply chain issues, strategic geography, and so forth, you have to understand that other countries, particularly like China, they all operate the same way, whether it's trying to put a military base in a foreign country or acquiring rights to mineral rights in the land. This is how nation states operate. So while you'll hear the conversation of saving the climate, protecting the planet, electric vehicles, renewable energies, all this is important, and so forth and so on, understand that there is the kind of great power competition ongoing underneath all of that, because this is a hunt for resources. If the world is in fact pushing away from fossil fuels and into renewables, well, then the question has to be, how do we get a hold of the minerals and rare earth minerals that allow renewable energy technology to exist? Lithium is at the core of that competition. And this is how nation states operate. This is why China has been acquiring this such large supply of like chemical lithium supply, for example, because they see the great importance. And this is operations outside of China, especially like in Australia, for example. So to continue on with the article, to maintain this competitive advantage, Chinese companies are now increasing their investments in the lithium triangle. China's Ganfeng Lithium, for example, is the majority stakeholder in Argentina's Cauchari Olaroz operation, which is set to begin production by mid-2022 and should become one of the world's top lithium production mines. Additionally, Chinese investment in Argentina's lithium industry may occur through its Belt and Road Initiative, which Argentina is expected to join in the near future. You've all heard me talk about the Belt Road Initiative many times. I got a couple of episodes if you're interested in knowing more. Similarly, in Chile, China's Tianqi Lithium became the second largest shareholder in SQM, Chile's largest lithium mining company, holding 23.8% of the shares. Chinese companies Ganfeng Lithium and Tianqi Lithium now represent two of the top three lithium mining companies in the world. Not only has China increased its investment in the lithium triangle countries, but it has also strengthened its bilateral relationships. Through its vaccine diplomacy, both Chile and Argentina have depended heavily on the Chinese vaccines Sinovac and Sinopharm to vaccinate their populations against COVID-19. As China furthers its influence in the lithium triangle countries through increased investment, but also through its aggressive vaccine diplomacy, it will likely continue its dominance of the emerging lithium industry. Confronted with such a reality, the United States should strengthen its ties with the lithium triangle countries in a post-pandemic context, as investment is desperately needed to jumpstart regional economies buffeted by COVID-19. I feel like every time I start doing research on one of these subjects that I find intriguing, I can't but help find how China's fingers are already dug into it, which is, if you're just a pro-America, meaning you just want America to win, in the context of national security. This concerns me. Maybe it'll concern you as well, because in fact, China is not just competition, they are our adversary, and ideologically and every other way possible. So if that's the case, and China's got this aggressive stance towards the lithium industry, my first question is, what the heck is the United States doing about it? You know, why or where are we in our relationships with these countries? This is a challenge before I move into our conclusion. This is a challenge that the United States faces when it comes to foreign investment abroad. For example, oftentimes for countries to do business with America via our State Department, they ensure that that country, country X, is meeting certain standards, both from a climate perspective and from a human rights perspective or workers' perspective, before they're allowed to do business or trade with the United States. Okay? Meaning, I'm just throwing out a hypothetical. United States wants to work with country X. Country X is going to be building a lithium mine. That mine has to ensure certain standards are met in order to not destroy the climate. And additionally, they have to pay their workers a certain amount, allow certain rights, you know, let them to organize, unionize if they want to, etc. This is hypothetical, but this is something the United States puts up front before certain trade deals are allowed. China, let me emphasize this point, China does not do that. That's why so many countries find Chinese investment attractive. It comes with not a whole lot of strings attached, but it does certainly have some, but not a ton. This is why the Belt Road Initiative has been very popular around the world, and you've heard me talk about this ad nauseum at this point. Countries with low foreign investment historically, perhaps not focused on by the United States or its other Western allies, find China to be an attractive partner that doesn't require a lot in terms of additional, rather than just purely more a financial economic stake, not requiring, say, climate or workers' rights issues, anything along those lines. This is an uphill battle for the United States, and we can't avoid it. If we're competing with China, China will always have the edge in the sense that they do not require the same types of standards to be met by their partners, their economic partners, as the United States does. That doesn't mean that they will always win or that we can't win that battle. It's not. However, it is a challenge that we continue to have to negotiate, be creative, and engage in aggressively in order to maintain that strategic advantage in all senses that it's required by the competition between the United States and China. So let me close out with kind of seeing the bigger picture of how this one issue of lithium and electric vehicle battery production, climate change issues, and so forth, how that little thing over here actually has tremendous geopolitical effects that are right up on our radar if you're reading the news today in mid-August 2022. I'm going to give you a couple of points here on how the relationships that the Latin American countries have started to have with China has affected those relationships that those countries had previously had with Taiwan. For example, the Christian Science Monitor points this out, that of all of this economic activity between Latin America and China has inevitably led to closer political and even security ties with China, enticing Latin America's growing number of leftist-led governments with talk of mutually beneficial, quote, South-South relations. One result, a region that was once one of the world's friendliest towards Taiwan has shifted towards Beijing. Several countries have recently decided to recognize the People's Republic of China instead of Taiwan, like Nicaragua did in December 2021. Quote, many countries, including Brazil, Chile, Argentina, and Uruguay, now export more to China than to the United States and the European Union combined. While economic relations, in many cases, have matured beyond natural resource exports to infrastructure development and other investment, according to George Hein, a former Chilean ambassador to Beijing, who is now a research professor for international politics and global south at Boston University. Again, quote, these are countries that need the trade. They need modern infrastructure. They don't see the United States very active in these roles, so they're not about to push the Chinese back. Are we all getting this as American citizens? Are we realizing that As much as we don't want to be the world's policeman and we want a little more of an isolationist bent on our foreign policy, we might not have the luxury in that case to still enjoy the prominence, the material success that our country has been enjoying post-World War II if we don't, in fact, engage, if we don't view other countries as potential partners. Because if we don't, Chinese will. And guess what? They don't have our values. They don't, more importantly, they see us as a direct enemy in their hierarchical chain. They're below us and they want to get on top. That's not going to become a peaceful process and to change King of the Mountain. Again, let me continue on with some examples here. According to Patricio Giusto y Juan Manuel Haran, writing for The Diplomat. In the last 5 years alone, Taiwan has lost four allies in Central America. They lost Panama in 2017, El Salvador in 2018, Dominican Republic in 2018, and Nicaragua in 2021. In all cases, the severing of relations with Taiwan came hand in hand with grandiose announcements of Chinese investment and loans for the small countries, something Beijing has been able to cope with easily, given the gigantic asymmetries and pressing financial needs of these countries. In the case of Panama, the announcement in 2017 was a $4 billion high-speed train project to be financed by Chinese banks stands out, although it's still under consideration. For El Salvador, the break with Taiwan brought immediate commitments by Beijing to finance various infrastructure projects for some $500 million. The Dominican Republic, meanwhile, China's promise after the break with Taiwan was for initial loans of $3 billion, expandable up to $10 billion. And finally, in Nicaragua, China can now relaunch its long-delayed Nicaragua Canal project under the isolated and economically stifled dictatorship of Daniel Ortega. So we're seeing the benefits of China investing just pure dollars into these Latin American countries. Additionally, because of the fallout of lack of interest by the United States, perhaps even the fallout of the COVID-19 pandemic, governments in Latin America and the handful of countries have now bent away from right and to center to even more leftist-led. Leftists tend to align with the Chinese Communist Party. So now, ideologically, they're also finding kind of parallels into the systems of government, in addition to the direct foreign direct investment of foreign dollars. This is the United States' backyard. This is Western Hemisphere. And if it's not just from the perspective of gaining an admirable size of the lithium market in Latin America, once economic relationships have blossomed between countries, often security alliances will come as well. You know, militaries will exchange training. Officers will be sent from this country to that country to further enhance the relationships. This is what the United States does all the time around the country, around the world, with our partners in different regions. But we have longstanding relationships, economic and military ties to Latin America, but not focusing more in the Western Hemisphere and not giving enough attention to these countries. They've gone to another broker, and China is more than willing to be playing around in our own backyard in the instance of acquiring sizable stakes in the lithium industry, as well as potential other investment opportunities, just further, you know, getting their fingers into more of Latin America. And this is where I conclude us out with kind of our courses of action for the United States handling whether it's the lithium mining issue or any other type of foreign investment and competing against China directly. For our most likeliest course of action, I believe the United States will attempt to prevent and mitigate supply chain disruptions. They will boost investments for new mining, new process facilities, allowing to protect the environment, human community health in Latin America, this directly giving foreign investment and bilateral trade. But the most dangerous course of action that the United States could take, in my view, is to fail to lack both military and economic engagement in Latin America, and just focusing on the benefits of, say, democracy or how we need to combat climate change and social justice. It's this theme that I think the United States need to do a better job of. Yes, there are multiple versions of democratic governments, and we should encourage, as a country, democratic governments throughout the world, especially where we're trying to have strong long-term relationships from an economic and military perspective. It tends, whenever we ideologically see eye to eye, at least in how people should be governed, typically the economics and the military relationships do just as well compared to, say, more bigger differences between our ideological viewpoints on how people should be governed. And if this is the challenge that I think the United States leaders, when crafting foreign policy, will always struggle with, it's focusing so much on just how democracy needs to be expanded or climate change is the issue of the time. These governments aren't viewing it that way. They're looking at, we need dollars, we need investments, infrastructure, we need it to be updated today, and China's offering that. So if we fail to engage in that way with direct dollar investment as well as direct military engagement, I think China could get a stronger footing in Latin America, and this is kind of the last thing the United States would want after so many decades of relatively peaceful relations with the United States and our Latin America partners in the South. So thank you for joining me. I hope you did enjoy this episode and to learn more about this rare earth mineral and the use of lithium, and whether it's electric vehicle batteries or other types of technologies. There are certainly tremendous amounts of strategic importance, whether it's the lithium triangle, as well as our other partners in the Latin America region. As always, I hope you are picking up what I'm putting down. I am Matt Parker, and this is Brief Before Impact.